alright. Alright, alright, so here we are. Living it day by day, you are a superstar. At least that's what she used to always say.
Hello everyone, and welcome to the latest edition of OWW Radio. This is the official radio program of OnlineWorldOfWrestling.com. Each episode, OWW Radio, look at WWE, TNA, and everything else making news in the world of professional wrestling. I'm your host, David, and today I welcome wrestling star PJ Parker to the program. I worked many shows with PJ, and I'm looking forward to having him on the show today to talk about his wrestling career, his wrestling background, and what he would still like to accomplish in this business. PJ Parker, welcome to OWW Radio.
Thanks for having me, man. How you doing?
I'm doing well. I've wanted to have you on the radio show here for quite some time now. We finally got our schedules coordinated, so thanks again for being on the program.
Hey, man, I appreciate you having me. It's a pleasure.
So tell me what 2016 has been like for you so far. Are you staying pretty busy?
I have been staying pretty busy. Bookings have been coming in, new promotions have been coming in and have been looking at me and everything. Yeah, 2016, so it's looking to be very busy. I'm married with two kids and got a full-time job as well. But everything's been going great. I've been staying healthy, a couple bumps and bruises. But, all these new promotions and everything that's going on, a lot of indie wrestlers are going to be very busy this year.
I guess the bumps and the bruises are just part of the business, right? If you're not all bruised up, you're doing something wrong.
Yeah, if you don't have some form of soreness after a wrestling match, then you're really not giving the fans what they paid for, in my opinion.
Mm-hmm. How long have you been wrestling, PJ?
I've been in the business 6 years.
Yep, 6 years. And, I know when I do your ring introduction, I say you're from Wolford, Maryland. Is that true? Are you from the Maryland area?
Yes, sir. I was born and raised in Dorchester County, which is where Wolford is. I grew up on the water. My family was a water family, a bunch of watermen, Parker Seafood in Church Creek. That was around till about the early 90s when my great-grandfather passed away. Been around here my whole life. I love Wolford. It's a small country town. Everybody knows each other. I can walk out my back door and I'm right at the water.
Well, how did you get exposed to professional wrestling? Were you just a kid watching TV with your family? What was it that got you interested in this profession?
What it was, I'll never forget. One day, I was with my dad, and he had a wrestling movie, and he put it in. And there was two wrestlers. I'll never forget it like it was yesterday. Jake the Snake Roberts and the model Rick Martel. It was WrestleMania 7. It was a blindfold match. They put these black bags over their heads, and the crowd, and it just had me so into it. And right then, I was a fan. I never missed it again. Every Monday, I was in front of the TV watching Monday Night Raw, WCW Nitro. When ECW came around, I was very big into ECW. In fact, it was a ECW pay-per-view in 1998, Wrestlepalooza. My favorite wrestler of all time, the franchise, Shane Douglas, he main evented that show, and he wrestled that match with a fractured palate in his mouth, two broken bones in his elbow, and right after that match, he went right to the hospital and was scheduled for surgery. And the match that him and another guy who was one of my all-time favorites and a very underrated and underutilized talent, Al Snow, big yeah. Al Snow fan, them two went out there, and they told a story, and they didn't say a word. And watching the respect that everybody gave Shane Douglas after that match, that's when I realized, you know what, that is something I really would like to do. But the Jake the Snake Roberts, the model Rick Martel match, that it just, like, grabbed me, and I was just hooked from that point on.
Whenever I have the privilege of talking to wrestlers, PJ, that's some of my favorite parts of the interviews. They talk about what was it about this business that did grab them. And anyone, whether you're a ring announcer, referee, wrestler, or even just a casual fan, we all had that moment. For me, it was literally the first time I ever went to a live event, and they dimmed the lights, the music came on, and oh my God, the excitement of being there was crazy. That was 1985, and I've loved it ever since. But there's a difference, so PJ, from watching Rick Martel and Jake Roberts and getting interested and then deciding you were going to go to training and actually do this. What made you decide, I can do this, I have the physical ability to do this?
I've always been a big guy. I come from a big family. I'm 6'1", 285 pounds. I've always been a very good athlete. At whatever sport I ever did, I was always involved in sports. Played baseball, played football, played basketball, and I always, in all my coaches' eyes, and I played lacrosse as well. I always stood out because they said even as a big guy, I could always move. Like I always had good speed for a big guy, and I have a very good friend of mine. Stephen Knopp, who is also known as Brandon Mercury. He started training when he was a teenager. And at the time, I had some stuff going on in my life. My parents were going through a divorce and everything, and I was not able to do it. But about 8 years ago, when Power Pro Wrestling started talking and coming about in Delaware, the time came for me to be able to get in the ring, and I was asked, you know, this company's coming up, and we're looking for some younger talent, and there were some trainees there, and I stepped right up. I was like, you know, you don't get opportunities like this much. Here I am able to help, you know, be able to help a company start on the rise, and plus they can help me get into the business and live my dream.
That's pretty impressive, and I think sometimes people don't realize, PJ, you know, you mentioned how you were a great athlete, played a lot of sports. People may not realize until they go to training, right, how great an athlete you need to be to do this. I've gone to some training schools and watched what they put these kids through. Practice is brutal.
I tell you what, practice was more brutal. I got more nervous for training than what I did with matches, because in training it is just repetitions, same thing over and over and over and over, and until you master it. And if you don't master it, you don't advance. So there's always that willpower, and there's always that drive, especially when you're involved with a class, when you have a bigger class of students, because if there's this one person that can't get this thing down, what we're working on, we're holding the whole class up. And the good thing about me was I was with a lot of guys, and I was with a lot of veterans. Nick Taylor, who was also known as Sicken, Adam Ugly, Pretty Jimmy Dream, Louis G. Rich, they all had trainees as well. So we all were very fortunate at the time. We had these veterans. We didn't just have one veteran teaching us. We had four or five. So we got all different variations. So it was very good. But, yeah, practice, I've seen people throw up within 20 minutes of just running ropes. I've seen people throw up just by taking bumps. I have seen one person get in there, take a bump, and get out and say, this was not for me, just off taking one bump. Practice is no joke. They're hard on you. But in the end, after practice, when your coach or whoever you had a training session with comes up to you, you're like, that was great. You did this, you did that. And when you come back the next day or next week, you got bruises on your back, you got bruises on your arm, your back hurts and everything. It makes it worth it to come back.
When you started training, PJ, how many days a week were you going? Was it once a week?
I was going once a week because where it was in Delaware, and two kids at night. And at the time, my father was sick as well. My father had had brain cancer. He had just started getting sick, and I couldn't be there every single day. So it was about once a week I was able to go up there. But the good thing was I was always what all my coaches always told me and a bunch of other guys, because I came up in a class that we all were just so hungry. I came up in a class with Michael Zamidio, Vic Damone, Jason Seiss, you know, a bunch of young guys, and we all were just, we studied, and the good thing is we were like a sponge. We soaked up anything anybody ever told us. And the one thing that I always took, was they always say, trainers say, watch matches at the indie shows. When you get done wrestling, or even at back then when we were training, we weren't on the show. We were just there to help set up the ring, set up the guardrail, set up chairs, tear down the ring. You know, at the time I was a timekeeper. I used to ring the bell. So, but the good thing is, I had the best seat in the house. I got to sit there and watch every match. And that is how I learned. And from being only going once a week, I really ate, slept, and breathed it. I used to come home, watched it. It drove my wife and kids crazy just watching it, because I just always wanted to there's always a reason why something is done in that ring.
Yeah.
And I always wanted to know why. So I studied and studied and studied.
Well, PJ, you mentioned some of my favorites. Sickened, and of course, of Riot City's Most Wanted, and Pretty Jimmy Dream, Adam Ugly, and Michael Zamadio. And these are really, really talented workers. So you were surrounded. I never really thought about that, though. Also, if you were a member of a class, that there was pressure to keep up and not slow the class down. When you were training, was a lot of emphasis put on character development and promos? How did you kind of build that part of your persona?
That part of me, when we started having tryout matches in training class, that's where our personas kind of came together. I'll never forget when Michael Zamidio, he always just had this one guy in class just always, just giving him crap. So he had like a split personality with him. And that's how kind of Michael's, in a lot of Michael's thinking came into that. But how I just carried myself as a big guy and very intimidating with power and everything. When I was doing my tryout matches, and the way that our coaches and the other trainees, they were pretending to be a crowd. And my persona kind of came off of them. And they weren't just joking around. They were being legit fans, like they were actually at a wrestling show. And I took what the fans were giving me. Brandon Mercury told us, they're like, you're not a bad guy, you're not a good guy. That's for us to decide.
Mm-hmm.
And the stuff I was doing in the ring is what I was getting a good reaction from them. So I took what they were giving me and how my trainers were seeing my character and what I was trying to go for, because I wanted to be something real. I didn't want to have like a dancing gimmick, anything like that. Not that there's nothing wrong with that, because JD Bam Bam Browning, who is another phenomenal indie talent, who's a big guy, he struts, comes out with feathers and everything, and I love it. But for me, at the time, I had a beard that was down to my stomach. That was like a Duck Dynasty beard. So I was always kind of a rough around the edges, didn't take no crap kind of person. And I just took that and a couple of my real-life situations that I've had when I've had to get physical, and I just kind of turned it into the PJ Parker character. In each match that I've always had, I always take what the fans and everybody else gives me, and I add it to my character, because you don't ever, even Stone Cold Steve Austin and The Undertaker, they've been around for years and years, it's especially The Undertaker, if you always look at whatever era he was in, his character always develops,
yeah.
always changes. And that's something that you got to do, even on the indies. You don't want to stay stale because, you know, on the indie scene, it's not about like, oh, I've got this show. It's if the promotion doesn't see where you're, you know, if you don't think that they're going to help you, they're not going to use you. So you don't want to become stale. You always want to try to better your character, whether you're a good guy, whether you're a bad guy, or whether you're a tweener, which is, you know, when you're in between. You always just want to build on it. And I always took in class, you know, we had days where we would have promos, do promos, practice promos, and then practice our, we even practice our entrance. When you walk through the curtain, people are going to give you a reaction just by how you look and how you walk.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, and like I said, I was very fortunate in training where it just wasn't one-dimensional. It just wasn't, all right, you're going to get in here, you're going to learn wrestling, and that's it. They, each one of them took us by the hand pretty much, and they taught us everything that you'll need. And for that, all of us were just so grateful for what they did.
You talk about continually learning and watching, you know, The Undertaker and watching your wrestlers being at ringside. There's so many matches now and so many opportunities with things like YouTube and WWE Network and all the shoot DVDs are out there. Talk a little bit, PJ, about just the library of resources you can turn to now to continue to grow.
Oh, my goodness. It's ridiculous. I mean, like I said, case in point, the WWE Network. You can go to the WWE Network. You don't even have to watch a WWE match. You can go back to the 1980s AWA. You can go back to the Mid-South. You can go to Classic. Mm-hmm. You know, Starcade, WCW. Me, personally, I was a big fan of the early days of Ring of Honor. And that's where the YouTube comes in because that's where YouTube comes in a lot. And I YouTube a lot of old Ring of Honor videos back when Daniel Bryan was known as his real life name, Bryan Danielson. I loved the early days of Ring of Honor because they were just, Ring of Honor was a different breed for me because it were guys that had gimmicks and had characters, but the matches and the stories that they told in the ring, and they didn't say a word. It was just unbelievable. And I think that's why Ring of Honor is getting as big as it is now, because even still, I mean, Ring of Honor is just getting better and better and better. But yeah, the libraries, I mean, there's New Jack shoot DVDs that I watch. And New Jack has a reputation of being, you know, a hardcore extreme wrestler. And that's what he got his name off of. But
yeah,
what a lot of people don't, if you go back to Smoky Mountain Wrestling, Jim Cornette's promotion, that is where Mustafa and New Jack got their big break as the gangsters. And New Jack is a phenomenal wrestling talent. And a lot of people don't know that because, you know, a lot of people don't know about all the library, you know, all the professional wrestling libraries that there is. I mean, you can go back to when Roddy Piper was tag teaming with Ric Flair. You know, people don't know that. Like, you know, if you have these libraries, you know, and if you're really into the business like that, there's matches that you can watch that you wouldn't even think happened.
Right, right. Well, you talk about some of the matches, some of the promotions that have influenced you. Talk about being a big guy and how you can look at other, you know, people forget Andre the Giant could really move in his day before he got ill towards the end. What are some other big guys, King Kong Bundy, Kamala, those types, that may have influenced you either in the past or even still today?
My favorite big man of all time is Bam Bam Bigelow. Love Bam Bam Bigelow. Somebody who was 6'3". 400 pounds, he could climb to the top rope, he could move like a cruiserweight, he could get in there, he could do moonsaults, he can cartwheels. Bam Bam Bigelow, for me, him and the Big Boss Man were two of my favorite big guys. But Andre the Giant, speaks for itself right there. The greatest big man, you know, the business has ever seen, in my opinion. I was a big, Big John Studd fan, and I actually had the chance to wrestle Big John Studd's son at 302 Pro Wrestling a couple months ago, second generation star Sean Studd, who's a phenomenal, phenomenal big guy, another big guy that's a phenomenal talent. Bam Bam Bigelow, though, really stood out for me. And The Undertaker, you know, Undertaker's not, you know, he's more tall than what he is, you know, kind of girth. But somebody who was 6'10", who could jump over the ropes, who could move the way he could. Yokozuna really stood out. Somebody who was 550 pounds. He could throw a super kick on The Undertaker, and I'm talking about flush right to his chin, and The Undertaker, 6'10", 6'11".
Yeah.
I mean, I'm very fortunate of the era in wrestling that I grew up in. Such agile big guys. I mean, Hakeem, like I said, Big Boss Man, Bam Bam Bigelow, Kane, The Undertaker. You know, it's, I mean, I could go on, but the one that always stood out to me was his athleticism, and he always told a story with his movement in the ring as a big guy, was Bam Bam Bigelow. Big fan of him.
You know, I read something the other day. You know, of course, he headlined a WrestleMania against Lawrence Taylor, and he actually carried Lawrence Taylor to a decent match. And really, they felt in the article I was reading that Bam Bam deserved a little bit better treatment by WWE. If you look back at his legacy, that, you know, they really could have done more with him and actually should have rewarded him for carrying Lawrence Taylor to an acceptable WrestleMania moment. Is that fair?
I 100% agree with that. And I'm a big Bam Bam Bigelow fan. I watched a 3-hour shoot video with Bam Bam. And, you know, according to Bam Bam, Shawn Michaels, even in a lot of his shoot interviews, has said that even himself back in the day, the mid-90s, you know, wasn't exactly the best person, you know, to be around, you know, in whatever business, type of business, you know, and you're in, there's always going to be politics or whatever. Bam Bam Bigelow was just a victim of bad politics at the time, according to him and other shoot interviews that I've watched about the history about that year. You know, it was just a bad break for him, and I 100% agree. I don't think Bam Bam really cared about being the champion, being the guy, but I think he would have liked a little more notoriety, a little more of a push. You know, in my opinion, not necessarily being the guy, but hey, maybe let me wrestle the guy. But, you know, back then, you know, Shawn Michaels was the top thing. I take absolutely nothing away from Shawn Michaels. In my opinion, the greatest in-ring performer in my eyes, whether, you know, and that was back then when he had his demons and, you know, and his problems. But absolutely, I think the way that match went, and he main evented. I mean, people say, oh, well, Shawn Michaels and Diesel that year, they wrestled for the title. But I'm like, you know, Bam Bam Bigelow was the event. I mean, he was the main event. And, yeah, I mean, he took a football player, great football player, and Lawrence Taylor, and who's never been in the wrestling, never had a wrestling match. And his first wrestling match is on the grand stage of WrestleMania. And Bam Bam Bigelow made him look like $1 million.
Yeah. Turning back to your career, PJ, talk about how difficult it is to adjust your style. If you're working with a big guy like Rayburn one night, and the next night you're working with Sickened or Pretty Jimmy Dream, how difficult is it to change how you perform in the ring?
It's not really difficult for me at all. I was always taught, be yourself. You know, you change. I mean, sometimes you have to adjust, you know, to other people, like if you're wrestling a guy, you're like, oh man, you know, I got a bum leg, so you know, we can't be doing a whole jumping around and all this. Only that would really change everything. But, you know, I've never really adjusted to anything. I've never really had to adjust to anybody. We're out there to tell a story, and my actions, and whether I knock down Rayburn or rather Sickened knocks me down or whatever. As long as we get a crowd reaction, I don't think nobody really has to change anything.
Looking at your career, going forward, what do you think you need to improve on to learn more about or continue to improve as the PJ Parker character continues to grow?
I think I have room to grow and everything. I've been fortunate to be around guys who've been in the business 13 years, 13, 14 years, and I'll go to trans seminars with them, and they're in there talking like they're greenhorns, they're like, they just started, they want to do this, they want to do that. So looking at them and where I'm at now, as far as psychology rise in the ring and in ring work, I think sky's the limit for anybody that wants to put time, the effort, if you have the passion, and you want to get better. But for me, I just want to get better in every aspect. I want to get better as a character. I want to get better as an in-ring performer. I want to get better as a talker. I want to get better how I look when I walk out. I just want to be the best that I can be. Whether I make it on television or not, that doesn't make a damn to me. It really doesn't. That I'm out there living a dream. Whether I'm on TV or not, I told my dad one time and my mom I was going to be a professional wrestler. I've done it, and I'm going to continue to do it, and I'm going to continue to get better. Every time I walk through a curtain or every time I'm at a show, my goal when I leave there is to have a better match than my last match. I take that attitude with me to every show, every indie promotion that, I'm blessed to have me. I always want to get in the best match possible. So whether I'm in the business 10 more years, 20 more years, I'm going to continue to have the same attitude. Just continue to get better. And whoever I'm in the ring with, I want to help them. Let's get better. Let's all, because the only way everybody to get better and to make any promotions as big as what we want them to be is everybody has to have that drive and that attitude to be better. And I always talk about you the most. It starts with the ring announcers. It starts with the sound guys. It starts with the refs. You guys, I put you guys over so much because without you guys, when you guys hit play on our music or you guys announce us to the ring, this is an energy rush that nobody wouldn't believe. So, the whole promotion in general, everybody that's involved with it from the ring crew all the way down to the refs, ring announcers, timekeepers, sound guys. Everybody has a part in a show. And I think every show, every promotion I've been a part of, I've been very fortunate to be around people that just have that drive to be better.
PJ, I'm so glad you said that, though, about everyone contributing to the show. When I first got into this business, I didn't really understand that or realize that. And when I started ring announcing, I thought my role was only to introduce the wrestlers and then go sit by the side. You forget that people are still watching you the whole time. And when you come out to the ring, if you're not in, you're a manager or you're with someone, or a tag team partner, they're watching you the whole time. You're telling a story with your face, your body movements. It's so much more than the 1, 2, 3, right?
Absolutely. It really is. In fact, one of my favorite moments at an independent show actually involves you. It was one of our earlier PPW shows. It was about a year ago when Brandon Mercury was wrestling Siren, Sicken's female manager at the time from Riot City. And she gave him a tornado DDT off the second top, and you popped up out of your chair. Like, that just blew your mind. And it did. People don't understand that, even when I was a timekeeper, like if you hit a big move on a guy or a single move or a single word, like if you throw a punchline on somebody, whatever, if you go, ooh, or oh my gosh, it tells the fans like, huh, he's part of the show too, maybe.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And that's why I always put everybody, the ring it. A show cannot happen without everybody. I mean, you can have wrestlers. That's great. But if you don't have, sound guys, if you don't have good referees, and that's another thing that people don't understand. Referees are a huge, huge part of a wrestling match. Huge part of a wrestling match. They tell the story just by their actions alone.
critical. It's critical.
Big time critical. I mean, if they're just out there just, you're not helping the cause. I mean, they're out there telling a story with every time somebody hits a big move or something. They're out there, like, as a fan, they're jumping up in the air like, ooh. Like, sometimes I've seen, I hit a move on Sicken one time in a match. Sicken came off the top, and I caught him in a crossbody, and I spun him around, and I sat out. It shook the whole ring. And the referee stood there with his hand over his mouth, and I'm sitting there pinning him. I was like, you got to count here, bud. I could sit here and go on and on about how everybody's such a big part. But the referees, timekeepers, sound guys, ring announcers, they're not just out there to say, hey, so Joe Blow from Las Vegas. It's not. You're out there telling a story like this guy. When you announce this guy, he is a star. And, you know, and people eat that up with how people get announced to the ring, their music, their actions. It's not professional wrestling. It's not just about wrestling. It's a good chunk of it. But there's so many other aspects to this business that people just don't understand until you really get in it long. The longer I've noticed I'm in this business, I learn something new at every show. You can never stop learning this business.
Looking forward into your future here, PJ, what are an opponent or two that you can't wait to get in the ring with?
Oh, man. Oh, such a long list. I'm excited to work Rayburn. In fact, I'm working Rayburn June 18th, Power Pro Wrestling in Milford. Can't wait for that. There's a lot of guys that I would just love to work. I mean, I've wrestled Sicken before in like three-way triple threat matches, fatal four-ways. I would love to have a one-on-one match with Sicken. I think me and him could really steal the show. There's a bunch of guys. I could sit here and go on and on. I would love to work Jimmy Dream. I've worked Adam Ugly before, had phenomenal matches with Adam. I'm a big fan of Louis G. Rich. I would love to work Louis G. Rich. There's some young guys at 302 Pro Wrestling. Travis Banks, young guy, got a very good, very good future. A lot of aggression. He's going to be a good talent. Would love to work him. But one of my top guys that I would just love to work is Kendrick Amari. I would love to work the Vampire King, Kendrick Amari.
He's got a great ring presence, a lot of talent. Those are some excellent choices. It's been a pleasure, PJ, having you on OWW Radio. Before I let you go, the most important question of the interview, though, is who are our Cowboys going to draft in a couple weeks here? We got the fourth pick. What are we going to do with it?
Ah, man, I tell you what. Well, with Randy Gregory being recently suspended, I think the Cowboys, with the number four pick, they need to take defensive end from Ohio State, Joey Bosa. I think Joey Bosa would be a phenomenal pick because I was reading something the other day because the Ravens were looking at him, and he said he does not want to play for the Ravens because of Jim Harbaugh being the coach at Michigan and him being Ohio State in that rivalry. He said he doesn't want to leave that rivalry to go play for a Harbaugh. So maybe the Ravens take that into effect, and I'm thinking maybe the Cowboys, number four, I think we should snatch him up.
I like it. Before we let you go, PJ, where can your fans find you on social media?
I am on I do not have Twitter. I cannot keep up with that. But I am on Facebook at PJ Parker. You can find me at 302 Pro Wrestling. You find me at Adrenaline Championship Wrestling. Find me at Power Pro Wrestling. But if you want to get a hold of me, I'm on Facebook, PJ Parker. And to all the fans and promotions, thank you. I can't thank them enough for promotions that took a chance on me and helped me and other guys in this business. And the fans, let's just say, none of us would be doing this if it wasn't for them.
Mm-hmm. I've had the pleasure of working with you for a long time now. I know the crowd loves you, and I know you have a tremendous passion for this business. So, PJ Parker, it was great having you on OWW Radio today. Thank you so much for being here.
I'm so humbled, Dave. I appreciate it very much. Thank you.
You got it. I'll talk to you soon.
Take care, bud.
For the latest news, analysis, and updates from the world of professional wrestling, don't forget to check out onlineworldofwrestling.com. Also, check out our Twitter feed at OWWCOM to get all program updates and announcements. Again, my name is David. I will be back soon with another edition of OWW Radio. Thanks again to today's guest, PJ Parker, for joining the program. Take care.
All right, well that's okay.